What's up, Fang Banger?
Hello, and welcome to Fang Banger's podcast. We're chaotic, horny friends rewatching the chaotic, horny HBO series True Blood. I'm Elise.
And I'm Ryan.
Ryan, thank you for joining me. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to jump back into the world of Bond Temps for the first time in many, many years.
So I'm laughing that you said Bond Temps because I don't know how to pronounce the city that this show is in, but I know that that's wrong.
I know it's wrong. I just
You know that too. No. Like, not judging. Like, I know you said it that way on purpose. And like every time Melissa says it, I'm like, I try to mimic her, but like, I'm like scared to say it. It's like in Pod Race, we're getting real off track already, but in Pod Race, when like Renee Bourgeois is the director, it took me like the third time he directed an episode for me to like get his name correct. So anyway, Bon
French is hard.
Did I say that? I said it kind of. Anyway, True Blood. We're so happy to have you. We are me and my beer here because no one else is here. No, but in general, I was wondering what your True Blood. What got you into True Blood?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, just putting things in context, like the show came out sort of in the middle or at the tail end of like Twilight Mania.
Right.
And so
that kind of missed me a little bit.
Yeah, I was working at Barnes & Noble when the last Twilight book came out and when some of the movies were coming out. So it was like a big deal and vampires
were
everywhere.
Yeah, it makes sense. That was your job at the time, you know.
Right. And, you know, and these books were also starting to become popular, I feel like. I was at least aware of the book series before the show started. But it was really my partner, Jill, who was interested in watching the show. I don't think we had HBO at the time. And so I think we got the first episodes, the first season on DVD. And watched it that way. And then I think later we got HBO. It's all fuzzy because it's been that long.
yeah.
You know, kids don't get old. This is what...
I mean, it was like 15 years ago, so
So I've seen the first three seasons. And then after the finale of season three, I was like, I think I've had enough.
I don't remember specifically what happens with that, but I'm looking forward to us getting there.
So yeah.
See if you stay.
Yeah, I part of me would like to stay longer. I'm going to see how it goes, but
yeah, for sure. No commitments.
I just remember there being a lot with like the King of Mississippi or whatever, and
that
being a whole thing. And then I also think, and I can talk about this more as we go through, but I think just setting my perspective, True Blood at the time wasn't the show I wanted it to be, which is not the show's fault. Because what I found really interesting about the idea is all of the, like, societal, like, you know, how would this actually affect the world that we live in terms of, like, the culture and social stuff. And, like, that is a big part of at least this season and these first, like, three episodes. Mm-hmm. And that sort of, from my memory, sort of starts to fade away once they, like, establish the world and set it up. It becomes more and more about the characters involved in the story, which is, there's something wrong with that. But I think... You know, especially 15 years ago, I was a person where I was like, well, this show isn't doing the things I'm interested in.
Right.
And so, like, I'm
going to
move on.
But, like, that's a valid reason to stop watching something, honestly. We talked a little bit in the last, at least in the first episode, about how a lot of the societal things in the show are very, very obviously about gay people in our society. So that is a very big interesting part for me as well. Like, that is something that interests me as well, so.
Yeah, and I think the show probably does a better job when it's not trying to map onto a specific group, like, map vampires onto a specific group of people. You know, similar to X-Men in terms of, like, how that series, you know.
Not the first. I think this is the second or third time X-Men has come up on this podcast so far.
But, I mean, conceptually, it's not entirely dissimilar because, you know, when the X-Men debuted in the 60s, it was a race allegory. Then later on, it became a queer allegory. And that sort of continues to evolve and change over the course of, you know, the way our world changes, the way those characters change, et cetera, et cetera. And so But I think that this show, given the way it's approaching things and the tone of everything, I think that the less, like I said, the less one-to-one it's trying to, like, map vampires onto a specific civil rights struggle is probably for the best.
Right. No, I get you. Yeah, I feel like, I mean, this show can be pretty campy at times, and I think that that makes sense for, that kind of makes me agree with what you're saying. Like, we don't, I'm not a camp expert or anything, but, like, we don't have to be trying to do everything. It could just right. be, like,
yeah, and it can
in general.
Right, and it can sort of set up that allegory on a very broad scale and not have to, like, you know, deep dive into all of those right. kinds of nuances and things, which, again, I don't think the show is terribly interested in nuance, which is part of what makes it camp.
Yeah, I would agree. In the last episode, we had the scene where Tara literally asks Bill if he had slaves, and, like, nobody seemed to care about that except for Tara. Like, that, I don't think that that was, like, realistic.
Right, and so I don't think it was, and I don't think the show is, like, I think the show's trying to acknowledge that, but, again, isn't trying to, like, explore what, you know, what does that right. mean to Tara or any of the other characters in that room. And, you know, yeah. I think if this show were made today, maybe that would be different, maybe it wouldn't, but, you know, right. it is kind of messed up, and I thought about that moment a lot, and I wanted Tara to be like, you don't even remember their names? Like, what the like, yeah. what the fuck, dude?
Like, she might as well, like, have not been told anything. She right. brings it up again in the episode that we just watched as well, talking to Sam.
Yeah, and I think, again, like, that's a very interesting concept, but this is not the show that I think is ready or equipped to deal with those things, and I think I might have a better time watching the show, and I certainly have enjoyed the first three episodes, revisiting them.
Yeah,
I think I might enjoy the show better now, knowing what the show actually is and being able, and, like, letting go right. of the things that it's not about, which is, again, is not the show's fault yeah. necessarily.
And I don't think, and I don't really think the source material is that involved or that interested in the allegory either. I think that's an Alan Ball thing more so. So it's interesting reading the books, and, like, there's a lot that's left out. You just kind of get introduced to characters, and it's, like, this person's cousin and blah, 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 and it doesn't really go into, like, so far I've really only reread up to where we are, but...
Yeah, and I don't know about Charlotte's her first name, right?
Charlene,
I think. Okay. Yeah, I don't know much about Charlene Harris as a person, but from what I do know, she's also maybe not the person to deal with those things.
I don't think she is. And I don't think either of us are saying, like, you have to be gay to talk about gay issues or anything like that. But, like, yeah, I don't think that she's the person for that either.
Right. I guess, right. What I'm trying to say is, like, this feels like a show... based on a book series written by a straight white person who isn't necessarily thinking about these issues and the implications of things that they may raise. Right. And I think the show is trying to do better than that, but isn't necessarily going to be the most diverse behind the scenes. And, you know, behind the scenes,
probably not. But I do, one thing I would say is that, and we talked about this before, like, in the book, we've basically just, in the chapter where this stuff happens, this episode's things happen, is, like, we kind of first meet Lafayette, and, like, we have not met Tara. Like, they're just not really big characters. So one thing I do find interesting about the show is, obviously, they were like, okay, well, we have these two black characters and we are going to make them more prominent, and it doesn't feel forced to me. I'm obviously a white person and someone else might feel differently, but it does feel like, at least on camera, they're trying to diversify a little bit. But we know, diversity is not everything.
Right. And I do think that, like...
You have to, like, actually put in more work than that.
Right. And I think it's, you know, a late 2000s, early 2010s, well-intentioned, you know, the values of the show are certainly progressive overall. It's just about, you know, who gets included in that conversation and all those other kinds of things that we tend to talk about. And I kind of want to just sort of acknowledge about that I sort of just wanted to like acknowledge that up front so then we can talk about all the fun things that I don't feel like we need to like bring up that conversation every time we talk about a thing. But I'm glad that Tara and Lafayette are a bigger part of the show than the books, not having read the books, because they are two of my favorite characters on the show.
Yes, me too. Agree. This week, we're discussing Season 1, Episode 3, Mine. The episode aired on September 21st, 2008. It was written by Alan Ball and directed by John Dahl. And this is, as we've been saying, we've been getting a little summary from the True Blood Wikipedia fan site. So it's usually pretty good. So Bill must suddenly lay claim to Sookie in order to protect her from a cadre, that is a word that I would not have used, of his vampire acquaintances. At Marlotte's, Sam and Tara seek refuge from their respective problems, and Jason asks Lafayette for medicinal help. Dawn is found dead in her bed. Oh, that rhymed. After an intimate encounter and a falling out with Jason. That Jason. Do you have any first impressions of this episode that you want to share? Or actually, I forgot to ask you, because you hadn't been on the last two episodes, if you had any impressions of the that you hadn't mentioned in the your intro.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the... Inclined. Yeah, no.
Words are hard.
Words are hard. I think I covered some of my overall thoughts, but I will say one of the things that struck me that maybe I wasn't really thinking about before I started watching, it's just like the time period and like the fashion of the show feels,
oh my god,
like it's from another time and place, which is, you know, an uncomfortable feeling. Yeah. Because it's like less than half my life ago. You know, and so going back, it's weird to think of something that I think of as relatively new. And because it's not a period show, it's not like Game of Thrones, where like that world is always going to look that way.
It's set contemporarily, yeah.
Yeah, and so seeing like the fashion and the clothes, and
there's a lot of tank tops.
Right? Yeah, there's a lot of tank tops. Lafayette plays a CD in this episode. Like, there's just certain things.
I don't remember if it was on this podcast or my other one, but I was saying that I like recently bought a CD, and the reason I bought it is because I went to Taylor Swift and she had the CD that was like only available at that show, and you had asked me if I had a chance to pick it up, and it was only like $10, so I was like, oh, I'll get one for myself too. And then I get home and I'm like, I don't even know where to play this.
My this is totally off topic, but my mom asked me to for a copy of Midnights on CD, if I could like burn her a copy, and I was like, I don't have a way to do that right now, because like I don't own that music, it's all streaming. Right. And I was like, I can show you how to listen to it on your phone, and I can connect your phone to your car. And she was like, that's too much. So I'm excited
I'm
to
like
get this,
half
this
tempted
copy
to
of
just
Midnights
give your mom. I'm just tempted to give your mom my copy of Midnights. Like, where am I gonna listen to it from?
I mean, I can burn her a copy of mine. Like, once I have a CD, I can make a copy.
Ryan and I haven't seen each other in a few months, so I just have not given him his CD yet. This is a very casual episode of this
is a very
podcast.
Well, the episode itself is a little casual, I think. but yeah, so those were... that was kind of a big thing that jumped out at me. And, you know, again, also, like, how different of a person I am since the last time I watched it, and how much more thoughts I have about, you know, all the things I was mentioning before were not things I was probably thinking about the last time I watched it.
Yeah.
But it did also make me think of like sex scene discourse and how like even even on this show, which is very horny and has a ton of sex scenes, there's still a lot of times where like a sex scene gets interrupted before it becomes like a full-on sex scene. There's a lot of like, you know, I guess what you could call like foreplay or like mid stuff, and then like another thing will happen, or like in this episode a vampire is getting a blowjob, but there's a scene happening around, like that's not the point of that scene. besides some weird faces that he gets to make.
I mean, some of it seems sex position-y, but, like, some of it is just entertaining, and who cares? Like, I don't need... This is something that at least Ryan and I have discussed, because there is a... There's... I wouldn't call it, like, a movement, but there's a group of film people that think that if they haven't consented to watching sex scenes and things, that that's a problem. And it seems like they're obviously using language that is about rape and assault to describe watching a movie, which is completely inappropriate and wrong. But we do not long for the Hays Code to come back. This podcast supports sex in media. We love it.
Absolutely. and again, I think one of the things I liked about this episode in particular is the variety, like the different tones of the sex scenes that are in this. Mm-hmm. So like the most elaborate one being between Jason and Dawn.
Yes.
Because
after it's kind of, like, fake, I'm going to kill you.
Yeah, I mean, and even before that, where she's like, I'm going to leave you tied up and I'm going to go to work and come back. Like that, that's very funny and also kind of erotic. And then, you know, that whole scene where it's, you know, not, it's definitely not consensual, but it's certainly a thing that both those characters, I feel like, are depicted to be enjoying in that moment until Jason maybe takes it a little too far, and then she actually has a moment of like, oh fuck,
yeah,
this might be happening.
I couldn't believe that she actually had sex with him after that. I was like, all right, well, I mean, okay, so that might be one of her kinks, we don't know. What we've said about Jason in the past is that Jason is a kinky person who does not understand what his kinks are at all, and like doesn't have the language to understand these things. So like, someone might be into that kind of scene that we saw, but there is no way for us to know because Jason's too stupid to ask.
Right. And it doesn't seem like it's, you know, it's not like there's a line of dialogue sort of implying that, like,
they've
done that before.
It wasn't the point of the scene or anything. It's just, yeah.
Yeah. But it, you know, if I were a less open person, I could see the tone of that scene changing kind of back and forth, like, to be, you know, a lot to take in. And, you know, but I think the way that the, like, the music and the lighting and the character, like, the actor body language is in that scene, I think sells it mostly as, like, mostly an enjoyable thing. And, like, she does kind of treat it as, like, a prank that went too far and not, like, an attempted assault.
No, I agree. Dawn just seems like someone that has a line, and that wasn't, that did, apparently didn't cross it.
Right.
The next morning, on the other hand, but I don't want to get ahead of myself.
Right, right. The next morning, a line might be crossed, and she might also cross a different line.
Dawn's innocent. one other thing I wanted to say about this episode, well, I had a couple, like, first impression things. We do get to, like, live with the characters a little bit more. We get to see Tara's home life. We have a little bit more information of, like, how Lafayette has, like, a million ways of making money. You know, we know he works on that road crew, and he works at the bar, and then obviously is also a drug dealer and maybe sex worker. And Sam is very lonely. Yes. So we do learn a little bit more about them. I do think that Diane, Liam, and Malcolm, those, like, three vampires that, like, showed up at the end of the last episode, are very cliche vampire for me. I'm sure it was intentional, but I mostly found them irritating.
Yeah, no, I mostly agree. I feel like they definitely fall into that sort of, like, they could walk onto the set of a Blade movie and nobody would bat an eye, like. I don't think that's a bad thing. My big takeaway from that scene was, like, because afterwards, when Bill and Silky are talking, he, like, out and out is like, oh yeah, they're evil, like,
yeah,
you know. And I'm like, Bill, you don't have to hang out with these people just because, like,
right. I mean,
they're the same kind of thing you are.
I also feel like there's a lot of about vampire society and politics that we just don't know yet.
True.
So I don't know if, like, there was a reason that they came over. We just didn't get to know it or anything like that. Like, besides social. Like, it didn't seem like he really invited them or wanted them there.
Right. I think there are probably is a lot of vampire stuff that hasn't been explained to us yet. And I will say, in general, the show does a pretty good job of, like, delivering exposition over the course of the episode versus, like, all in, like, one or two scenes.
Yeah, that is one thing. I think they're very efficient that way, in how they tell us what's going on. Like, it just does, it just feels natural and not like they're spouting information at you. One last thing I for my first thoughts was I really loved that when Jason got home from Dawn kicking him out, which I guess was still the same night, not the next morning, not to come to think of it. They had him flipping through the channels and Horror of Dracula came on. So I got to like see my boy Peter Cushing a little bit, and I podcasted about that movie on Monkey Off My Backlog, so I was just very excited to see it.
Yeah, I'm always excited to see Peter Cushing or any Hammer Horror thing show up in another thing. And I do think that scene of him like flipping channels and it's just all different vampire stuff is just a very funny gag.
Like Reverend Newland's son was on the other, like it was like some Bible channel or whatever.
And then there was a Vampire Bat documentary.
Yes. It was very much like you can't get away from the vampires. I really enjoy the sense of humor in this show.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, like, I don't want to say like self-aware kind of thing, but like the show certainly is aware that it's doing things that are tropes and cliches, but it's having fun with those tropes and cliches.
Yeah,
because it's like we're going to keep playing with them and see what we do with them.
Yep. Love it. So, unlike the last two episodes, since I'm host, I'm like, I'm going to do this shit how I want to. Chaos. It's not really chaotic, actually. Instead of going beat by beat through the plot, I thought it'd be interesting to discuss the different character journeys throughout the episode. So I've divided it into Tara, Jason, and Suki, which I think really works because I don't think those three characters really interact in this episode much, even though they, like, in the last episode, they interacted quite a lot. So they all have their own things going on. So I wanted to start with Tara. Okay. I think a lot of stuff happens with Tara, or we get to learn more about her. And even before we get to see her home life, like, she's drinking at her job after, like, while cleaning up and everything. That was not meant to sound negative. I don't think there's anything wrong with having a beer at the end of your shift. And, like, it's funny because I think that Tara is both most the most self-aware person in the show, but also, like, doesn't respect herself. And I don't mean that, like, I think she doesn't think she deserves nice things, even though mm-hmm. she wants nice things. She doesn't think she's worthy of them. So, like, on one hand, I think, you know, she's telling Sam about her trauma and blah, 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 this, you know, yada, yada, yada-ing it, basically. So, like, she knows, like, her life is fucked up and she has a lot of stuff that's not great, but I still think, like, she lets it affect her in a way that, like, is not, you know, the girl needs therapy. I mean, I think that's true of everyone.
Yeah. I think that's true of everyone in general, but especially the people on the show. And I'm glad that they used this episode to introduce her mom, because that explains so much about how, like, why she is the way that she is in the present, is because, like, you can just imagine being raised with a mom like that, and, like, you know, she clearly cares about her mom and, you know, wants her mom to basically be a better person, but it's clear that she's, like, internalized all of the things that her mom has said, all the religious stuff especially, like, not that she believes it necessarily, but, like, the underlying message of not feeling worthy of anything or not deserving of happiness or whatever is just part of her makeup at this point.
Yeah, her mom says a lot of malicious shit to her. I mean, she gives it back, but I think that that is not the same thing as being the initiator of that. Her mom, you know, when Tara gets home, she can't even, we skipped over the sex.
We'll go back.
We'll get back to that. But, like, so, you know, Tara's mom, like, she can't even stand up straight, and she's being extremely spiteful towards Tara, using Jesus in the process, which, I'm not religious, but I don't think Jesus would have wanted that. I was proud of her when her mom threw the bottle at her head and she was bleeding and she was like, fuck this, I'm leaving. Like, I get the impression that when she was younger, that line might not have made her leave the house. like, she would have just probably still stayed and tried to, like, take care. Because she was trying to help. She was trying to put her mom in the shower, clean her off. And her mom just, like, was still on all of her mean shit, throwing shit at her face. And it was just...
Yeah, and it's hard to be a person where... Because it's unclear as to if Tara is actually living there or not at the moment so far.
I think she... I think she is known to be living there because she kept saying she couldn't go home.
Right, okay.
Because her mom was probably drunk.
Right. Thank you for clarifying.
You're welcome. I was saying a few episodes ago, I feel like... Or Melissa said it, and I agreed. I've probably seen this first season, like, 4 times at least. So I'm like, I kind of remember.
But yeah, it's hard being sort of, you know, not feeling like you can be at home because there's someone there making that situation that toxic for you. It just kind of makes sense the way that she would be there. And I do like that the way that the way her mom is depicted and, you know, the religious language her mom is using, you know, ties into all the background stuff about religion. And, you know, I think it's also in this episode that Sookie asks Gran, like, you know, basically, like, what would Jesus think about vampires? Like, and I think it's interesting
says, I don't think Jesus would mind a vampire or something. I don't remember if it's this episode or last episode, but yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's...
Gran agreed.
Yeah, and I feel like there's... I also have not seen 6 Feet Under, which I'm sure it will make some of our listeners just aghast.
That's why I watched this, because I loved Alan Ball so much.
Right, and I just feel like, you know, outside of the Damon Lindelof show, whose name I forget that I also haven't watched...
The Leftovers,
yeah. I feel like...
I'm just here to remember all the shit you can't remember.
Elise, you're an excellent memory bank.
The funny thing is I don't remember shit from, like, my actual life. I just have these random facts.
I feel there's so little pop culture engaging with religion right now that going back to and watching a show that is at least, like, you know, having characters that do have religious beliefs, whether they're toxic or not, I think makes for a more interesting show and maybe more accurately reflects the broader world outside of the left coastal elite, quote unquote, you know, bubble where supposedly we're all atheists and whatever. But I mean,
accurate, be like, well, I am, but right. I mean, me.
Accurate for both the people on the show right now, but like, I there are churches still operating in my area. I assume people go to them.
So I have friends that go to church, actually. So
what I'm saying is religion still a big deal in American life and still shaping American life. And it's cool to see a show that's actually engaging with that. And maybe, again, I watch so little television that there could be shows out there I don't know of, but just,
I mean, The Righteous Gemstones, which I don't watch at all. Isn't that like a show about like a religious family? Like they're like, is that what that's about?
I think so. But you know, to my larger point, I feel like we don't get a ton of movies or a ton of media right now that treats people with faith in an interesting way, or at least shows different kinds of, you know, perspectives on faith and religion, where it's not just like, oh, this person is religious, so therefore that's bad. You know, like Sookie is portrayed to be a good person who, you know, at least has some amount of religious belief, and it's sort of in contrast to the televangelists that we see on TV, you know, the more evangelical types. And also
I was thinking after I said that Righteous Gemstones probably would have been from Reverend Newland's perspective or something.
Right.
I mean, but like making fun of it.
Right. And so I just think that's an interesting theme of the show that, you know, is something I'm sort of keeping an eye on. And, you know, I think if someone doesn't acknowledge your right to exist on television, I think that them perishing mysteriously in a car accident is not the worst thing to happen after that.
And not to spoil anything, but I do think we get to like see more over the next like seasons and stuff of like Tara's mom's like religious journey a little bit, so that is something that you will be able to have like a through line on.
That does sound vaguely familiar, actually. So, right. You know, I'll be curious to see how much more of my memory comes back.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
As I watch along. But I think that was the most interesting development for Tara on this episode is that she and Sam are having those after work drinks and they end up having sex.
Which I appreciate, like, the conversation around it. Like, they literally talk about it first, and I just thought that was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
They both were like, this is what I want it to be. I don't want it to fuck up our situation. We're both lonely. Like, let's do it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one, I'd be more worried for Sam catching feelings in this situation than I would Tara, because she doesn't seem like the kind of person who catches feelings other than whatever feelings she has for Jason.
Which I think she mentions, you know, he kind of calls her out, like, why didn't you tell? This whole thing starts because she's like, why don't you tell Suki how you feel? And he's like, why don't you tell Jason how you feel? And it's kind of funny that they're both pining for these siblings, which I didn't think about until right now. And Tara says something interesting about how she enjoys Jason unattainable to her. And that goes back to what I was saying earlier, where I feel like she doesn't really want any. She doesn't think she deserves any happiness. I don't think she would find happiness with Jason. Yeah. That's a completely different issue. And I think actually Tara's smart enough where she probably knows that too. But she phrases it like it's she doesn't deserve, you know, like she doesn't say she doesn't deserve it, but that's like the tone I get.
Right.
Yeah, and they boned.
And it's also like, you know, I feel like her feelings toward Jason are like, well, it's kind of for the best that he doesn't, he probably doesn't feel that way about me because, you know, it would only make things worse, but it's easy for her to accept that because she doesn't feel like she deserves it anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
But he would totally treat her like garbage, which is terrible.
Yeah, I mean, like, even when they were cuddling last episode, he basically got like, oh, I gotta go hang with Dawn, by like 2 seconds, you know, like, he was just hanging out with her because, like, she was the person next to him.
Right, and they've clearly been around each other a lot because, you know, she's best friends with Suki and Jason is just around.
And they were
a lot.
Very, like, sitting comfortably, you know, like, they didn't seem awkward sitting next to each other like that, you know.
And not to talk too much about last episode, but I liked the dynamic in that scene where Suki and Gran were, like, pro-Bill, and then the two of them were, like, the anti-Bill. Like, it was just a fun dynamic to the whole, for completely different reasons. Like, Tara was mostly mad about slavery, as is justified. Jason is mostly hung up on his vampire phobia. so,
the
like,
kink that he's scared of.
Yeah. Right. The things he wipes his Google search history for.
I don't think he... I think Jason's the kind of person that, like, doesn't know that you could wipe your Google history.
That's totally
so
fair.
So different from Dawn and Jason, you know, Tara and Sam, it was more of like a fadeaway sex scene, and then you like we see them in bed in the middle of the night, and he's like making weird noises, and she I don't know if that's why she left or she just like she was like I had to get home basically. And that when she gets home is when her mom, like, hits her.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's interesting that her mom was just assuming that she was out having sex with somebody, basically, and she actually was.
Yeah, she hadn't in eight months, so it's been a long time.
I feel like there are other reasons why Tara might not have been home that are perfectly legitimate, but not that that isn't
she
also legitimate.
Yeah, like, I could very easily see her, like, falling asleep at Suki's house.
Right.
And we said this, I think Tessa said this last episode, like, it's weird that she doesn't just live with Suki and Gran already.
Right.
A little bit.
You know, but I hope this doesn't ruin, you know, this doesn't change too much between them. I think Sam being the sort of like sad puppy character of the show is something I definitely remember, and you know, I sort of feel for him, but also like I think, you know, Suki's whole mind reading thing just makes everything a lot more difficult.
Yeah, I think because... that he's not sorry.
Oh, I was going to say, like, I'm not that I think that he saw anything as gross as the examples that we've been seeing over the past couple episodes about things men are thinking about Sookie, but like, I'm sure he has his moments of, you know, letting his mental guard down because it's not a thing people are used to having to deal with.
Right. Well, there was the time where he like was near her and he like purposely in the, I think it was in the pilot, he purposely was like, oh, like talking about her in her, in his mind, and it freaked her out, Sookie. Mm-hmm. And I think, I don't think he hold, like, so far he doesn't hold up to me as much as he did the first time, because he's like, has that like nice guy vibe to him where he's like, I'm nice, but like he's still controlling and trying to like tell everyone around him, or tell Sookie like what to do.
Yeah, I don't think he's as bad as a Xander from Buffy so far, but again,
Laz keeps calling him Xander whenever he talks about him.
Yeah, I don't think he's quite that bad, but he certainly has the potential to be. I'm curious to see if, because I think one of the things about Buffy is, or the
Buffy
one of the
gets
about,
name checked in this episode.
She does, yes. But I think one of the things about Xander is I don't know that the writers of Buffy knew that he was a toxic character for a long time. Whereas I'll be interested to see if like the writers of this show see Sam that way, or if like it's still under that sort of like, oh, well, he's just like pining for her and is like,
right,
you know.
I don't remember, to be honest.
Yeah, we'll find out.
We will. So do you want to move on to Jason? Little Jason.
Yeah, we can talk about
this boy. This boy is constantly lying to himself about what he wants and desires. Like, he goes from like pretending to be a vampire that's going to potentially fuck and or kill Dawn, and then when he gets turned off because he like imagines Dawn as the same vampire that killed, that like probably that he thinks killed Maudette, the one that Maudette was banging in that video, he's just like horrified. And it's just, like, he can't, his brain is just, like, not, he's, like, it won't make sense to him.
And I just feel like he doesn't have the emotional maturity to understand what he's going through. And so he has no hope of processing it. And, you know, I don't know what's worse for him, is that if he, I don't know if it's worse that he lost his boner, or that what would have happened if he didn't. When that was going on,
right?
Like, I feel like that would have confused him more, because at least he immediately identifies a potential solution. Although I do feel like the, let's see, because we did talk about the sex scene before, so I think we can just talk about her kicking him out, basically.
The but, boner lost.
Yeah, and like, I really think that the, like, I don't think Dawn's actually kicking him out because he wasn't able to complete having sex with her. I don't think that's actually...
Oh, no. She was completely nice to him after asking him if everything was okay. And then he turns it around on her and is like, I don't like that you've been with vampires before. He basically did a Jonah Hill to her.
I don't know if you read
the text messages.
Oh, yeah.
Not to, like, date this episode, but... but he basically used her past against her in a way, like, which is, like, you can't want to have sex with someone and then also be, like, but you need to change your behavior. Like, you don't get to tell someone that. And that, I think, is what she was reacting to.
Right. And I think the fact that he keeps harping on that, like, I can still get it up as he's banging on her door, screaming at her, just is another, you know, demonstration that he is once again completely missing the point of anything that
totally. I think that Dawn pointing a gun at him and shooting it a couple times was completely unhinged, but I don't care, and I absolutely loved it. I'm sad that Dawn, well, we can talk about, you know, her fate when we get to Sookie's part, but like, I thought it was unhinged, but I was like, yeah, girl, get him. I mean, I didn't want her to kill Jason, but I was like,
I don't know how mad I would have to be at somebody to like, not to point a gun at them, that I can imagine quite easily, which is why there are no guns in my house, but I don't know how mad I'd have to be at someone to actually, like, put a bullet hole in my own floor.
Like, right, I was like, are there blanks in there at least? Like,
you know, I get that you have to demonstrate that it's loaded, but, like, you know, that's a little unhinged. But again, like, I think as a... Yeah. As a woman in that situation, I don't think it's entirely unhinged to be like, there's this man who was, you know, whether or not she enjoyed it or not, was acting in a threatening way.
Oh, totally. To I really think the unhinged part was like more the gun in the ceiling and yeah, on, okay. on, in the wall. Like, that was like, okay, but you have to live there afterwards.
Right. Like, I don't know if she rents, like, that she's not going to get her deposit back. It's like a lot of drama.
When we get to the spoiler section, I will answer the question of whether she rents because it's in the book.
Oh, fun.
I did think it was funny that, like, we saw exactly why he lost his boner. He pictured her as that one, well, we know him as Liam. Liam right. the vampire. and he immediately, like, the next morning, like, it's pretty early in the day, I think, goes to, or I guess it was not that early, because earlier in the day, Tara showed up at Lafayette. I did forget to mention that Tara goes to stay with Lafayette for a little bit, because she doesn't want to be at her house with her mom, which I think is a very good call.
Yes.
But yeah, so he asks Lafayette for some Viagra, and Lafayette's like, Viagra's legal, I do not have that, like, just go, you can get that at the pharmacy. But what he does have is V, so it's just hysterical. Like, the irony of, like, you can't get it up because you're scared that you want to fuck a vampire, and you use vampire blood to fix that. Like, that is so fucking funny to me.
And this is what I mean about the show not really needing to, like, stick too closely to the allegory, because trying yeah. to unpack what that would mean for Jason is too much for me to handle.
It's but, just so funny. And, like, he can't go a day without a boner. Like, he's so, like, I gotta, like, did he think he was gonna go back to Dawn's and, like, prove her wrong? Like,
well, I think on some level it's more about proving it to himself. Like, and,
no, I know.
You know, there's, I would say most men have a lot of self-worth and self-identity wrapped up in their penis. And I think for Jason, that might be 100% of his self-worth
yeah,
and self-identity. So, like, I feel a little tiny bit bad for him, if only because he is just too dumb to figure it out on his own. But I do enjoy the irony, you know. And I'm glad that if he's going to be vampire phobic, that he's not, like, Lafayette phobic.
Yeah. I do wonder if he had, because, like, he didn't have the cash on him to, like, pay the $600 for the V. So Lafayette makes him, like, do a dance in his underwear with, like, was that, like, a Hillary Clinton wig? I couldn't tell what.
Yeah.
A face mask. Like, it was some random. It looked like a woman, right? Like, I couldn't tell.
Yeah. I think it was just to hide his face.
Yeah. But, like, I was just trying to figure out who it was. So he wants it so badly that he's like, well, I couldn't tell if it doesn't matter, honestly, but I couldn't tell if, like, the video was leveraged to get paid, or he had to do both, or he was doing the video instead of paying the $600, because Lafayette maybe can make $600 off the video. And, like, right. I don't need to know the answer, but I love that I was like, I don't know what's happening, it doesn't make sense, I don't care, it's great. And well, we have little Tara peeking.
Well, and I do, I mean, you know, if Jason is a heteroflexible person, he could probably do pretty well doing some kind of sex work.
Oh, yeah. Jason's fucking hot. I mean, I'd fuck Jason. He's an idiot, but I would have sex with him at least once.
Yeah, I don't have, I mean, I wouldn't, but that's, I'm just straight, that's all.
Yeah. Fair, I guess. I'm just kidding.
You guess. I mean, I won't shame anybody for wanting to have sex with him. Mm-hmm. That's, you know.
I would hope not.
I'm happy for you all.
I don't really have anything else to say about Jason right now, but like, oh.
Well, I will just say, like,
what a mess of a person.
I will just say, I don't remember how this mystery resolves itself, but he is the circumstantial evidence is certainly stacked against him at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. I remember, but you know, I'll tell you later. I don't even want to say that in the spoiler section, unless you don't want me to tell you.
I mean, you can tell me off mic, but I think it makes sense to not keep
it. I didn't know if you wanted to, like, watch it without remembering or whatever, without knowing.
Yeah, I'm not a spoiler phobe, so that doesn't... Yeah.
No, I didn't think you were. So, we have Suki. I keep saying Suki like it's, like, Gilmore Girls. I really need to start saying just Suki instead. Well,
I mean, I feel like it's... Well, I don't know. I was going to say, I feel like it's Suki because of the accent. Because in my head, I just hear Bill saying, like, Suki. Like...
Right. But I keep saying Suki like it's the woman from Gilmore. Like, it's like Melissa McCarthy's character in Gilmore Girls. It's pronounced a little bit different. That's the New England version of Suki.
Today, I learned Melissa McCarthy was in Gilmore Girls.
Oh, yeah. She was Lauren Graham's character's best friend. Hmm. She was also a chef, and she was great. She did not come back, I think, for the reunion. Or maybe in that scene, I don't remember.
She was busy with her tentacles.
It was a little bit before that. I enjoyed her as Ursula. Anyway, that was the only bit of that movie that I liked. Anyway, Suki meets Diane Liam, which is the vampire that Maudette banged, and Malcolm over at Bill's house. I feel like she lets them know way too much information about her, and I think it's more of, like, a fight or flight. Like, I don't think she's, like, consciously doing it, but, like, she tells them that they can't glamour her, and I think that that is not something I would tell a vampire that I didn't know. I would probably pretend or, like, see what happened first.
Yeah, I mean, and this is one of the few times where I feel like the show is a little bit clunky with their exposition, and I know that, like, this is still written in a time where they're assuming that, like, episode 3 might be the first episode that somebody watches on HBO because they come across it Sunday night, and so, like, they're, like, reminding us that, like, remember, Suki can't get glamored by vampires.
Yeah, that's fair. So it's, like, a way of doing, like, in episode, like, previously on, even though you get a... Yeah, I got you.
Yeah. But
I love to do that on Deep Space Nine.
They do obviously that on Deep Space Nine. But again, I also don't think that invalidates your point around, I would not go around, you know, Bill makes such a big deal about, like, vampires can't have people knowing about our weaknesses publicly. And so I think the same is for Suki, especially because she's almost been killed the last 2 episodes.
Right. Which she mentions a little bit after this scene. Diane attempts to feed on Suki, but Vampire Bill, which I keep saying that I should call him that because Lazi has been like, I'm only calling him Vampire Bill from now on, declares Suki is mine. And then I, like, Leo pointed at the screen because that's mine's the name of the episode. And so she's a little like, what? Suki is rightfully confused by this, but he teaches her that by declaring this, that means that the other vampires won't feed on her. And she's like, yeah, but you can't feed on me either. And he's like, I know that, but they don't know that. So he obviously said that to protect her from them.
Mm-hmm. But, he does feel a certain amount of possessiveness toward her.
Is there something... Sorry, I feel like I'm hearing a noise on your end, and like a rustling noise, and I don't know if it's something that's moving or... I don't know. When you were talking.
It might just be me fidgeting. I'll try to...
Oh, okay. Yeah, it might be.
But yeah. I mean, Bill definitely feels some amount of possessiveness over her, and... It's too early for him to, you know, maybe publicly declare that.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I think his motives are certainly good in the moment of being basically like, Suki's off limits. And if the way under, you know, vampire custom, if that's what that means, then, like, sure. But it certainly catches, I feel like, everybody in that scene off guard.
I just think it's funny to be like, or to talk about it from, like, the way you said, like, what were... Jesus Christ. I would think it'd be funny to be like, they have a long vampire tradition. Like, it's like some, like, historical thing. I don't know. Right. You didn't say tradition, but you said something similar that made me
custom. Think of that.
Yes, thank you. You said it 2 seconds prior, and I had already, like, in one ear, out the other. I appreciated that Liam was like, well, if I can't eat, right, if I can't drink her blood, someone has to go down on me, basically.
Which, I mean, sure, it's just, like, I
didn't know those were, like, equivalent things.
Yes, right, that's what I was trying to figure out how to say. I do enjoy that the vampires are hedonists, by and large, that they're just like, well, we're not really alive, so we might as well just enjoy whatever we can forever. But that is a really, I don't know, again, maybe, like, vampire mores around, like, sex in front of other people are, is also very different from how humans typically are, because, you know, it's not that I disapprove of that, but it's just, like, it's an interesting vibe, and, like, obviously it makes Sookie uncomfortable, which I also feel like is kind of maybe the point a little bit.
Right. I mean, I also think if you've just been alive that long, you're not going to be modest also. Like, you're going to have different ideas about bodies, and you've known different fashions in the past.
True.
So I just feel like there's... I agree that it was probably to make her uncomfortable in some part, but I also think that he just doesn't give a fuck.
Right. The other... I was... go ahead.
I was going to say... He made some great sex faces during this blowjob, and I was very happy he didn't do the creepy eye thing again, because I kind of hate that.
Yes, agreed. The other thing about this part of the scene that, like, I just think is an interesting thing, and I think says more about maybe... Because I you can tell me if this is from the book or not, but, like, there's nothing in science that would make virgins smell or taste any differently. Like, there's no chemical change that happens when you lose your virginity. And so, like, I just know that, knowing that there is magic in the show later on, like, makes me feel better about that inclusion, because the, like, because I know things about Sookie that the show has not revealed, and so yes. Maybe, you know, there may be other explanations for this, but the way that it's stated about, you know, her being a virgin and just being, like, the best blood to drink, scientifically it makes no sense. And so I think
Right. The
way that this show starts by presenting, you know, vampires from a more, I would say, more sciencey perspective than magic perspective, it helps me knowing that that's coming, because that's such a, like, I don't know, weird, maybe a little gross in a way for the show to bring that up. But
I think it was gross, but I also think Diane meant, like, no one had bit her yet. I didn't take it as, like, an actual sex thing. Like, I when she said virgin, I thought she meant, like, no Unbitten. One's fed on her before. Mm-hmm.
I gotcha.
But that's I don't fair. Know, like, if there would be a smell from, like, the previous vampire that bit her. Like, I don't know.
Right.
But at the same time, like, I completely agree with what you're saying. I just don't know, like, what the actual intention was.
Yeah, I definitely took it sexually, but that maybe says more about me than the show, I think.
Well, that's because there was the other scene where she, like, was having, later, where she's having the erotic dream about him, and she does, in the dream, tell him that she's never been intimate with a man before. So I can understand thinking of it that way completely.
Right, right. Because I, from my previous watch, I had actually sort of remembered that Sookie canonically is a virgin.
Yeah, I had forgotten. But if you can hear everyone's thoughts, I can understand.
Oh, and again, I'm certainly not shaming her for being a virgin.
It seems very much a choice of Sookie's that she has, like, not wanted to have sex prior.
Yes, totally agree. And the last thing I'll say about that, at least for right now, is that I am actually surprised they couldn't smell Bill's blood in her bloodstream.
Yeah, yeah. Because she had eaten it.
Right.
Or drank it, or whatever you do. I guess it's a liquid.
Supped.
So, because no one's feeding on Sookie, and I think Bill is a little weak, he's been mostly feeding on, I guess, just that synthetic blood or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, Malcolm offers up Jerry, his fang banger. Janella is the other fangbanger, the one that gave the blowjob. I guess Malcolm is owns Jerry, but Jerry's like a free for all, and like Janella, I don't think they care so much about Jerry and Janella as they do, as Bill does about Sookie.
Yes.
So Bill's about to feed on him, and Sookie hears his thoughts that he has Hep B and that he hopes to infect Bill, and she shouts it out to like stop whatever it is, even though she doesn't know what Hep B is. So now these vampires also have an idea that Sookie can hear people's thoughts, which is another thing like, oh no, this isn't good for them to know this. A little too much information. Bill does go on to explain to her that it's like a mutated form of hepatitis that can affect vampires. There's no cure and it weakens them, so like you can more easily stake a vampire if they have Hep D. And it does nothing to humans. They can just be carriers of it.
Yeah, and it seemed like Hep D just like wears off eventually. Like I think Bill was saying it lasts for like a month or so.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like different in the book or whatever, but I don't think there's like a cure for it. So you might just like be weak for a month, but you'll have it forever.
Right, right.
Like maybe it's something where you like get flare ups every once in a while.
Yeah, and I think the lack of clarity around what the exact effects are made me unsure about whether or not Jerry being murdered over it was like worth. Worth what he was doing. Like obviously intentionally infecting somebody with anything makes you a bad person for sure,
right?
But like it didn't sound that serious, but I guess I wasn't thinking of it becoming like a chronic thing, like if that's always gonna either flare up or
I definitely read it as like someone who actively goes and gives HIV to people, although obviously hepatitis and HIV are not the same, but like that's like what I compared it to in my brain space.
Yeah, I did like later where they were like, well, you know, we left him off the side of Highway 20, and it's like, well, most of it.
Janella was like, so they leave, and I mean, it's clear that those two fangbangers are, or at least Jerry's pretty much, good luck to them.
Yeah.
And then obviously Bill goes to see them later, and they're definitely dead. But like, Liam's just like drinking Janella's blood out of like a pitcher, which is fucking funny as hell to me. Even though I don't really like these guys, like that was kind of amusing. Bill also, like, the reason he goes over there is to kind of try to tell them to like behave, which I thought was weird. These fools are not interested in listening to you. And he explains to Sookie that I guess vampires that like spend a lot of time together and become a nest become more cruel. And I mean, they like lose their humanity, and I guess I can see like not being around humans. But yeah, I just felt like it was all information I just like didn't really care that much about. Like I just like,
yeah,
wasn't that interested in those three.
I did like when the other vampires were teasing Bill for like playing human, and again, yeah. I don't think the show's doing anything with the concept of passing, but at least like that is kind of what Bill's right. doing. Like as much like he's
right.
he's certainly out as a vampire, but he's like, you know, trying to hire an electrician.
Well, his house is pretty much a dump at this point.
True, but
I mean, it's
like
a beautiful has beautiful bones. It's just right. like very dirty, and because no one's lived there for so long, it was just like a relative of his that died, or like a not a. It was someone from like his line a future relative that has passed away.
Right, and I guess what I mean is like these other vampires, like if they actually needed an electrician for something, they would just like extort it. They'd be like, you know, rewire my house or I will drain all your blood.
Yeah, totally.
You know, and Bill's like, well, I'm going to get a couple quotes. I'm going to probably pick the middle one. Like, you know.
I said last time I would have helped Bill if I was Sookie. Like, as for my, like, logistics brain, I would have gotten him phone numbers.
I really like that she was like, oh, these guys already agreed that they can come out at night. Like, no big deal. Like, she's really kind of going the extra mile for him, which is sweet.
I know, it's sweet. After all this whole incident happens, she decides she needs to leave. And I really appreciated that when Bill asked her if he could kiss her goodnight, she was like, no. Like, I could not stand being sweet with you after I was almost just killed. Like, that is, that's,
it's not the vibe.
That's not my kink. That's not my kink. She's not Dawn.
Right.
Yeah, so, like, you know, first we had it with the rat trays, although I felt like she got herself involved in that, so I don't know if I would go blaming Bill for that first
one. She was being a little nosy and white in that first.
Oh my god. I really enjoyed her erotic sex dream about Bill. Ever since she drank his blood, she, like, clearly cannot stop thinking about him.
I mean, he's inside her.
Yeah, it wasn't as euphoric, I think, as last episode, where she was like, everything is great. Like, she just, like, was acting like she was, like, tripping last time.
Yeah, she's, I mean, not, it was smelling also, crumbs, like, across the room. Can you imagine working at Merlant's if you had, like, hyper smell? Terrible.
No, it would be disgusting.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's all. Any food place. Well, I mean, if you think about it, like, think about that tiny little old food that was in the last episode that she, like, how much old food is probably,
yep,
you know, in Merlot's. I assume it, like, wears off, so it's probably not as strong as it was that first day.
I also assume a lot of the people in there smell bad.
She probably smells bad at Merlot's, like, for you and me. Like, we'd probably be like, eh. I love how open Suki is with Gran about her, like, feelings. It's really sweet. Like, she's telling Gran how Bill makes her nervous because he's a vampire, but, like, her heart is telling, like, her head's telling her to stay away from him, but her heart is saying to, well, Gran uses the word heart. I'm like, her pussy's telling her to stay. Yeah. So, I know Gran raised her, and this is something I've talked about already, but, like, she's so open with Gran in a way that I am not with any, and I'm, like, pretty open, but, like, I do not talk to my parents this way.
Yeah, you're, I mean, just from knowing you, you're more open with your parents than pretty much anybody else that, yeah, I know, and I know that you are not this open, so.
I don't think I would, like, tell them if I was dating someone, like, right away. Like, it just, like, that would not be a conversation. They would get, right, so excited and be like, tell us everything, and I'll be like, I don't even know if I really like them yet. Leave me alone.
Like, this is more of a Tara conversation, probably.
Yeah. But I was watching this with my mom, though, like, this morning, so that was kind of fun.
And the thing is, you know, I certainly appreciate that Gran is encouraging and not at all shaming of Suki, but if I was talking to a woman that I knew, and she was like, well, I'm kind of into this guy, but also he scares me, and, like, my life might
get
be, like, in a way that my life might be in jeopardy. Not like, oh, you know, it scares me how much I like him or whatever. Like, it was like, he scares me beyond the fact that he is a vampire. He hangs out with shady people, and, like, I've almost died twice. Okay. I'd be like, girl,
well,
I don't know if this
Gran
is
the knows one about the death part.
True.
Well, she said she had to bury her clothes after she almost was killed because she didn't want, like, why didn't you just throw them out in, like, a couple towns over or something?
Just do your own
laundry. I mean, I guess someone would find them, maybe.
Wash your own clothes for once, Suki.
That's true. Gran does her laundry. Okay.
But you know, like I said, if a woman I knew was like, this guy scares me, I'd be like, yeah, that you might want to stay away from him. I don't know that I would be that supportive.
Yes, Gran is definitely, I mean, obviously for the plot, they'll have to, like, probably move closer emotionally, but, like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree completely.
I'm just saying, supportive has its limits.
Yes. Like, I don't want someone to get, like, physically or emotionally injured.
Right. Don't wind up as the subject of a true crime podcast, Suki.
That's... Yes, exactly. Later in the day, she goes to Bill's house for a reason that I have no idea. They don't really say. And she looks in his house, and then she starts sitting on the stairs and basically masturbating on his stairs.
I mean, so clearly we know why she went there.
I mean, I don't think she, like, went there to do that. I think she's drawn there because of the blood and everything. And then when she was there, she just, like, maybe she's just intoxicated with the Or maybe she is turned on by everything that happened last night that scared her. I don't know. Like,
right. I mean, subconsciously, at least. We know why right. she went there. That's more what I meant.
Yeah. But unfortunately, she gets interrupted by a phone call.
and I was saying, like, I kept forgetting about Bill's blood still being in her. Because they really played it up in the second episode, but they didn't really mm-hmm. mention it that much in this one. And because, like, everybody right. on this show is so extra, I was like, this seems like normal behavior for the characters on the show.
Yeah, Sookie would not masturbate outside, I don't think. She does not seem like that kind of person.
No.
And that is not to say that that kind of person is bad.
I just don't think she would want to, because, like, most people would be like, well, I don't want to get caught. And she's like, I don't want to know what people think when they catch me.
Yeah. Right. I also think she's just very much, like, doesn't want anyone knowing stuff about her in general for them.
Right.
So I just think that she already doesn't like how people talk about her in town.
Right. Because she can hear all those thoughts.
Exactly. So this is actually a little bit different in the book. Sookie is supposed to work the day that she like has to go over to Dawn's. It's not like that big of a deal. Sam calls her and is like, you know, Dawn's late for her shift. And Sookie's like, I can't come in. And he's like, I'm not asking you to. Can you just, like, go wake her up? Which felt, like, very silly. I think in the book, they had got Dawn and Sam had gotten in a fight the day before. So Sam didn't want to, like, go there himself. None of that is, like, happening here.
Right. I mean, here they just kind of simplify it, and, you know, yeah. it seems like a thing Sam would ask Sookie to do. Like, that all right. seems in character.
Yeah. So it's interesting, because in the book, Dawn's is, like, on her way to work anyway. So it's like, why don't you just, like, go check that out? But, like, also, they had had a fight, and Sam didn't want to, like, go to Dawn's, I guess. I don't know what the fight was about. But, yeah, so Sookie gets there, and Dawn's not answering the door. She's screaming, like, honey, you overslept. And she realizes the door's open. Of course, in any sort of, like, horror-adjacent thing, she's gonna let herself in. And she goes into the bedroom, and Dawn is laying there, dead. Eyes open-ish. And then we get a really awesome campy scream. Like, after, like, a few seconds of her, like, processing what she's mm-hmm. seeing, she's just like, ah! And it's great. And then we cut to credits.
It's a great scream. I think I saw that Dawn's nipple was hard, and it made me wonder if your nipples stay hard after you die. So I did not do research or anything to try to find an answer, but it was a question I certainly asked.
Unlike Jason, you would have to wipe your Google search after that. Oh my god. Yeah. And then, like, a True Blood fashion, you know, something crazy happens, and then we cut to black and have to wait till next week to find out what happens next.
The show is very good about, like, cliffhanger. Like, I feel it's very HBO in that way, where I feel like
yeah.
there's always, like, boom, we're making you talk about what's going to happen next week as we close yes. out every episode.
Yeah. We got to make that water cooler talk.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have anything to say about the episode at large before we move on?
I think we covered everything.
Awesome. Normally now we would talk about character intros, but there hasn't been any main characters that popped up in this episode. But we did get a name check of one of my favorite characters, which we haven't met yet. Malcolm mentions Eric. So we don't know anything about Eric, but we have a name. I'm excited. So what do you think was the most chaotic thing in the episode?
So I think the most chaotic thing in the episode, I mean, probably was Dawn and Jason. And that the whole scene from her coming back to her kicking him out, and him telling her neighbor that, oh, your neighbor's a crazy bitch. So that was probably the most chaotic.
That woman looked horrified. I was surprised there weren't more people out, because it was the middle of the night and Dawn had been, like, shooting a gun. Like, where were the neighbors? Were the police called? Like, what is happening?
It's a very don't ask, don't tell neighborhood.
Like, yeah. Right. I would say my most chaotic is really just like Jason being horrified of the vampire sex, and then the V being like the answer for that, to help with his boner. Like, Jason's just very chaotic. He doesn't know what he's doing most of the time.
No.
Did you have a nominee for most horny thing of the episode?
I mean, you have what I think is the objectively correct answer in our notes. Yes. It's like, Sookie is definitely the most horny person in this episode, and I think the only thing that tops her sex dream is her touching herself on the steps of Bill's house.
Yeah, that was wild. I had forgotten that scene happened, but like, anyone could have seen her. She just can't control herself. It's hot.
Yeah. And I, for one, say good for her.
Yeah, totally. I agree. Our next section is going to be spoilers for the show and the books. So if you haven't watched yet and you're spoiler phobic, you might want to fast forward or call it an episode for yourself, because after this, we're just going to do goodbyes.
We need to come up with a name for the spoiler section.
Yeah, I agree. That would make it really good for me. Anyway, ever since Tasia reminded me that we find out in a couple seasons that Bill was like literally sent there to meet Sookie because of her being a fairy and all this other stuff, like, I've been extra watchful and sus of every little thing he does. And you just see how everything he does is like works towards that. And it's just really interesting to me. The other thing was book related, which I had already said. Sookie was in the books. Sookie is working the same day that she finds Dawn. And all of the, that, all, everything that happened with like her going, her mowing the lawn and her going over to Bill's, like, none of that happens. She basically just like wakes up, has cereal, and then goes to like get Dawn. And also when she's looking at Dawn's house in the book, Renee is there, Arlene's boyfriend. He's nearby. She asks him if he's seen Dawn. She actually has Renee call the police. I don't remember what he was doing there, but he's just like nearby. I think he helped her like find it. But like, it was, Sookie was very protective of Dawn's body in the book. She actually didn't let Renee like look at it because she felt like Dawn didn't consent to that, which I thought was really sweet and appropriate. And still no discussion of Tara in the book thus far. That's really it for book stuff.
Yeah, I haven't read the books, but I always find adaptation interesting.
Yeah, I mean, these are very much minor, very minor changes. I do think, like, for the most part, seasons 1 through 4 are pretty accurate to the books for the most part. And then after that is when it kind of goes off the rails a little bit.
HBO has never done another show like that before.
Exactly.
Or since, I guess I should say.
Yeah. It is really, it's not, can't even call it similar because, like, there were books to, like,
right.
to use. Because there's 13 books, and I don't remember. I feel like the last one came out, like, they were still coming out, I think, when the show was on.
I think
on.
So.
But she was writing, like, much more frequently than George R. R. Martin.
Yes.
I mean, I do think that these books are probably a lot easier to write. They were much less complicated.
Yes.
But yeah, I read all of them, somehow. This has been a lot of fun. I really enjoyed having you on.
Yay. I'm glad. I also had fun. And it was fun being like, sometimes it's nice having a deadline because, you know, I'm like, oh, I actually do have to watch these 3 episodes of True Blood before Sunday.
Yes. Yeah, I actually am better at watching things when I have to, like, do it by a certain time.
Yeah.
So, before we sign off, is there anything you wanted to plug?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, Letterboxd, Storygraph, and Blue Sky. I am probably not signing up for more apps at this point. No. At Silber, whatever, that's with a B. You can also find my writing on MovieJohn, and you can find my Disney history podcast, Dream with Mind and Heart, wherever you find your, wherever you're listening to this podcast, we should be there. So, and if you're not, please tweet at me or reach out to me in some way and I will fix that.
Awesome. You can find me on Twitter, Letterboxd, and Storygraph at chicken_attendee. That's T-E-N-D-I. And at chickentendee on Blue Sky, because they would not let me put any underscores in my username. I was very sad. Anyway, you can find my other podcast, Podwraiths, a Deep Space Nine rewatch podcast, on Twitter and Instagram at Podwraiths, P-O-D-W-R-A-I-T-H-S, and wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find our podcast, Fang Bangers Pod, on Twitter and Instagram at Fang Bangers, Bangers with a Z, Pod. Same username on both. Next week will be the episode Escape from Jagan House. Until then, I'm Elise, and my blood type is wearing gold pants.
I'm Ryan, and my blood type is lemonade, fresh squeezed.
Bye.
Bye-bye.